Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Shannon.
And I'm Cassie. Hey, Dark Hearts.
Hey, fam. Welcome back. Or welcome for the first time, maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
Hey, you never know.
Howdy. Welcome.
Hello to you, our listener. Whether it's your first time.
Yes, we are glad you're here.
Or the 57th time.
Yep. Shout out to our normal people that are here every week. Yeah. We love this. And I feel like every time we do another episode, I am in shock when I see the number of the episode. Like this week, we're on number 58. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's
a lot.
58?
I thought it was 57. It's
57.
I have
58 because didn't we skip a week? Because the one that I saw, timeout, let me double check. Because I knew I used to be the odd numbers.
No,
but
you're still
then
odd
we
numbers.
Skipped because hold, please. Well, let me go back. See, here we go. Library. this is how long it takes me to do a podcast. No. Oh, number 50. It's because it's confusing how it's
because
numbered.
Of the trailer.
I see here because it says 57 period episode 56. Yeah.
Yes. It's because of that trailer. It
so
because
what
trailer is episode one?
We're not 58. Just kidding. Okay.
I'm like, nah, girl, you're still odd numbers.
Well, I was very confused by that when I did that. I was like, oh, when did I switch? That's why.
No, no. Damn. That's why I said damn. Whether you're here for the 57th time
or the 58th next week. I'm just like foreshadowing. I don't know what's going to happen.
I suppose you
could have
listened to our trailer and it would be 58.
Yeah. I'm counting that just for my own sake right now. Okay. We're on number 50. What did we just say? 57. See, now I don't even know. And I don't know why I even put that when I'm typing up my notes. I very specifically go seek that out to find what number it is. Like, it matters because we never really say, like, welcome to episode 58.
Right. No.
Which I just did. But
when I type in the titles.
Yeah, it's fine. Nobody else really cares. Sorry, guys. That just got me all
that's
confused.
Just a mess
but
thing.
I guess where I was going with that is that we have a lot of freaking episodes. And I kind of don't realize how many we do compared to a lot of other podcasts. When I was researching this week, one of the podcasts that I listen to, they've been on the air for like several years and they do one like a month maybe because they hardly had any. And I was like, oh, we do a lot. So like,
we
good
do.
For us, you know?
I mean, they like super, super deep dive into like one case?
No, maybe it's just more of a hobby, like which, I mean, ours is a hobby too, but
yeah,
I don't know. Well, my daughter thought we did two a week. So I was like, oh, calm down. We can barely handle the one. Okay.
I was gonna say that one gets real tough
and
sometimes.
As a listener, it's tough when I listen to one that does have more than one episode a week. Cause I'm like, I don't know when I'm going to listen to this. I'm never going to get caught up. So we're just going to sail by with the one for now. And sometimes we don't even have the one. Well,
right.
Only like twice, but.
I mean, it's happened a few times, but it's fine. Yeah. And it'll probably happen a few times this year, too, because you've got a vacation.
Yeah,
and I have
got
vacation,
stuff going on.
And there's holidays.
Yeah. So it's
fine. Yeah.
Okay.
It's all good.
But yeah, that's where we're at. We're loving it. We had a website previously, very basic. We have a cool website now where you actually have links to things. You can, drumroll, shop our merch.
Heck yeah, you can.
And we have obviously not a ton on there right now, but we are definitely open to adding more. And we are open to suggestions if there's something that you would like to see. My daughter has requested a phone case already. And so, you know, things like that, you can make it happen. You just have to tell us. We'll see what we can do. Either way, check out our website. We're hoping to continue working on that and adding more to that, but the episodes are all linked in there for you if you need to find them.
Can listen straight from the website, and the website is real nice because it's real mobile friendly as well. So if you're looking at it on your phone, which I did see too, which you and I have to discuss whether we could actually have a legit mobile app for our podcast.
I did see that, which maybe first we're getting this website.
I was gonna say, I was like,
I
okay.
Know.
I was like,
because a lot of it just copies over, which is pretty cool. Because that's how it was at my last job, how we did it. But
yeah. But I like how I was like, if our website wasn't so mobile friendly.
Correct.
Yeah, I could then see it more so. I guess maybe eventually, because I saw this hosting site we use has options for like chats and groups and all these things. And I'm like, maybe if we get to that part.
Yeah. Like, hold the phone. We're not there yet, but yes. Exactly. Especially because we're doing it all ourselves right now. So it's like, we don't, if we had someone doing that like full time for us, it'd be a different story, but
100%. We're not there yet. Listen, I'm our tech person and that's a little scary. I'm not really sure.
Nah, you're good. You know, we figure it out. I spent the whole day on the website doing stuff. And then I thought of about 100 other things I wanted to put on there. And I just couldn't even do that because I didn't have enough time. Because it's a lot. It's a lot.
It really is. And I mean, just for now, we've got it going. Like I said, we'll see how much traffic our website gets and stuff. And if that's stuff that, like, you know, people want more things on it, like, we can totally do that. But for the time being, we've got the gist of things on there, and
get your shirt,
the merch is on there, and it's real nice. So yeah, it's real exciting. And also, you guys, real exciting, we've got the Grand Comic Fest this weekend in Grand Island, which unfortunately Shannon isn't gonna be there.
I will not be there. I'll be there in spirit.
I'll be there, and if you stop by and you want to see us, I'm sure I can FaceTime Shannon at some point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's just some factors that made it so I was not able to come. But I mean, yeah, we're going to have other things hopefully in the future too that we're doing that'll be closer to different areas of different people.
Exactly. And so my sister will be there helping me out. And then also I know Mike from the Retro Renegade podcast, who's been like kind of in charge of all this, him and his co-host are like in charge of all that. He's talked about how, you know, they'll invite us back again next year. They plan on doing this again next year. You know, this is their fifth one there. So, yeah, it's exciting. And they said they'll keep us in mind if they come across anything else. We're obviously going to look into things, you know, around Omaha and stuff too, as we can and stuff. And all those fun things.
Yeah.
I wanted to give a little PSA real quick. I was telling Shannon about this before we kind of dive into this week's. Just for the ladies, especially, for everyone, but as women, you know, Shannon and I were kind of discussing this before. Like, society teaches us, you know, to not put our comfort above other people. And I actually had a situation yesterday with a client who made some uncomfortable remarks, but in the moment I kind of didn't let myself process it. I went through it, and it wasn't until later when I was discussing it with someone else that I was like, yeah, no, actually I wasn't okay with this. It's just, I think my brain was like, we're not going to process this right now, so you can make it through the rest of this session and work, and we'll unpack this later. And I just realized, you know, there's a part of me that I'm like, no matter how much we talk about these things, we'd like to think like, yes, no, we fuck politeness and all these things. That's a really hard thing to break that cycle and that habit with. So then I also dealt with a lot of guilt of not dealing with it right in that moment, with not reacting in a different way. And the thing is he didn't say it in a way that necessarily would have come across as creepy. It was just conversational, but it was still inappropriate what was said. And, you know, so just one, don't, if you can't deal with it in that moment and it's later, that's okay. Like, that doesn't say anything against you. Like I
sometimes
said,
you
like,
just need to process. Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes, like I said, I really do think it was my brain at that moment be like, we're going to not focus on this right now so we can do what we need to do. And fortunately, I work at a place that supports me in that. They will no longer be on my schedule. It's taken care of. So that's very fortunate. But then there was that part of me that was like, okay, but am I overreacting? Am I doing this? And the thing is whether he meant anything by it or not, is a predator or not, I was uncomfortable. The comment made me uncomfortable. The connotations towards my job made me uncomfortable. And that's what matters. Like, my comfort matters too. So as women, we need to remember that. Like, our comfort matters. And whether or not those same remarks would have bothered someone else or not doesn't matter.
No.
It bothered me.
Exactly.
And so thankful I have a great support system. I have friends, you know, to be there for me, my sister, everyone, you know, I have great support system to help me through that. But also just know too, that if you don't, and you deal with something like that, like, reach out. Like, we're more than happy to talk, you know, with these things. Cause not everyone is fortunate to have that support. So yeah, that's my little PSA of like, listen, I'm 35 years old. I have a lot of ingrained things that no matter how much my logical brain is like, no, this isn't okay. Yeah. When it comes down to it, my lizard brain is still like, oh, we're gonna freeze for a moment. Yeah, so
I think that's normal because that's just how society has been. And plus, I think sometimes too, it's like the fear of the reaction, what reaction you'll get. Like, you know, you could have stopped it right there and said, this is inappropriate. But then you think about all the repercussions that come with that as far as like your job. And like, mm-hmm. I mean, it affects so many things and that really sucks. Everyone, there's no really right or wrong way, I think, to handle that. It's just, if you're feeling uncomfortable, if it makes you even question if you're overreacting, then you know you're not. I personally think, because there's lots of times you want to try to justify why they said it and let it go. But it's like, no, not okay.
Yeah. Yep. So, you know, we just wanted to put that out there for anyone who maybe needed to hear it. Like I said, I had people who were talking me through it last night and everything too. And they were like, yeah, no. And there were things that were said. I'm like, I logically know this, but having someone else sit there.
Yeah. Justify that it's true. It yeah. Helps. You know it. Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yes.
Well, yes. I'm glad that that's what, I mean, obviously, I'm glad it wasn't something worse, but I'm glad that it was handled now before it escalated, or you just don't know.
And that was my other thing, too, is I'm literally listening to a book that talks about these types of things, and it talks about the slow progression that some predator, and like I said, I don't know that this man's a predator. Maybe he's not. Maybe he just is a white male who hasn't had his privilege checked ever and doesn't think anything of it. But there are also those ones who start with those small remarks to see what they can get away with before they slowly escalate. Mm-hmm. So...
Oh, yes, definitely.
So,
there's that. Everyone can relate at some point in their life having something where they felt uncomfortable.
Right.
So there's ours. Well, there's Cassie's. Yeah.
There's my most recent one anyways.
That's it, man. Yeah. So, yeah. Along those lines, I guess I can just jump into the case.
Yeah, jump in. Let's to the lighthearted stuff at the end.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say, let's lighten the mood here and start talking about murder because that's light for us. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
We try to make light of it when we can. And also just because sometimes when things are uncomfortable and awkward and sad, like, I'll make a weird joke and it's weird. Right. But... you know,
it's a defense. It's just a defense mechanism.
Yeah. And sometimes I think people want some of the more lighthearted jokes because you have to almost to get through some of these things because they're just, they're icky.
I mean, you know? It's not like we're ever trying to joke at the victim's expense or anything.
No,
like
absolutely.
It's usually
not.
The murderer or the cops who fuck things up.
Yeah. Yeah. Always. So this week we're in North Dakota because we haven't been there in quite some time. And so I was excited when I came across this case, just not excited. I mean, that it, you know, once again, here we go. Just happy that I found this case because I was not aware of this one and I wanted to find something in the Dakotas. So, we are going to be in Valley City, North Dakota this week. There was a couple different things, as far as documentaries that I watched, there was a Dateline episode, which is kind of crazy because when I was looking this case up, I saw that this episode just aired in February of 2023. So like we're talking like 2 months ago and I didn't see it then. I'm pretty weird about like staying up to date with like 2020. Like I just watched the new one. I love that stuff. So I don't know how I didn't see this one. It just aired. It's actually very good. It's Season 31, episode 17, it's Who Killed Mindy Morgenstern. And this was, I watched it on Peacock, I think. And then there was another one that was on the ID channel, and it was Murder in the Heartland, or season 3, episode 1, The Farmer's Daughter. So those were the things I watched. There were lots of articles I read and lots of podcasts and all that. So we'll put that stuff in the show notes. I do think the Dateline was done really well. So... okay, Valley City. So this is nicknamed the City of Bridges because of the many bridges that cross over the Cheyenne River there. It's a very small town. There's only like 6,500 people approximately. Okay. So it's an hour east of Fargo, for those of our friends that like to know the map things. It's once again, I feel like we always are saying it's a very small town where everybody felt safe.
Right.
I feel like that could be another one of our slogans, you know?
Yeah.
Small town. Everyone knew everyone. Everyone kept their doors unlocked. But literally, it was like that there too. Also, North Dakota. Whenever I think of North Dakota, all I think about is Fargo. I think about the movie. I think of all the things, but like, I kind of forget that there's more to the state than Fargo sometimes, to be honest.
Is there though?
I mean, Bismarck, right? Is that their capital?
Oh, yeah.
That's the only other
Bismarck,
thing I know.
North Dakota.
Those of you that live there, I mean, yeah, tell us what you think, you know, of North Dakota, because I know nothing other than that. So I have never heard of this little town, but this was also where Valley City State University was located. So I looked it up to see, and it has a very small population of like maybe 2,000 kids. So like very community college type feel.
Right.
But it's part of like the North Dakota University system. So,
okay.
Yeah, this is where Mindy Morgenstern attended college. So as you know, that's who we're going to be talking about today. So Mindy Jo Morgenstern was born April 29th in 1984, and she was actually born in Columbia. So she was adopted at a young age with her older sister by Larry and Eunice Morgenstern. So they already had two older kids of their own, and they really just wanted to adopt. So they actually had found Mindy's older sister. They never say her name on anything, which is fine. But so I'll just refer to her as her older sister. But yeah, they actually planned on adopting her. And then they found out that she had a little sister also. So they were like, we'll take them both. So
that's nice.
Huge hearts. Yeah.
Together. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they took them both, and they just said they remembered Mindy was just so small and that she just had these giant, big brown eyes. So they actually lived in New Salem, North Dakota, not far from, I think it was like a 2-hour drive from there to like Valley City, but that's where she primarily grew up. So she was just a fun little girl who loved to giggle a lot and loved being outside, which was good since they grew up on a farm. They did all the farm things. So, you know, they would milk the cows, take care of the chickens, the stray cats. And Mindy actually loved riding in the tractor with her dad and would help him move like hay bales and stuff. Like, I don't know anything about farm life really, but they said that like she loved it, all about it. And her family was super close. They would always have like huge family dinners. And they said that Mindy was always sitting at the head of the table regardless, because she just loved being the center of attention. So, the only thing that kind of sucked for her, I mean, growing up was not only thing, but the only thing I'm aware of, I guess, that her and her sister, were picked on a lot when they were like on the bus because of them being from South America. People would make comments about them, you know, being darker than the other siblings.
That small town was very white.
Absolutely. And so like her older siblings were amazing, and they would always defend them and just tell kids like, leave them alone. And then generally it would stop because, you know, kids are just little assholes, and sometimes they just need to be put in their place.
Right.
So, as she got older, in high school, she was a track star, a basketball star. She participated in pep band, and she even did modeling. She was so pretty. When I saw a picture of her, I was very surprised I did not remember this case, because I feel like you generally see those pictures of those gorgeous. I mean, she's just had the very exotic look, you know, and beautiful. And they said that her gift was really just making people happy. That's another thing I would like to say. I have yet to find a case where someone talks about the murder victim being a horrible person and this and that. They're always
there is one case that I know of that I do want to eventually cover, which I know has been covered before. And it's like in some small town where this guy gets shot in front of a whole bunch of people, and no one will admit to who did it.
Yeah, it's in Missouri, right? Or I think it's Missouri, because I almost did that case. You can do it though, because there's a lot to that one to unpack, and I don't want to do all that research. So, but yeah.
But that is the only case I've ever heard.
And they all have each other's backs. Yes. Those people. Yep.
But
other than that, it's always the people that don't deserve it, you know? And it really sucks.
If I were to be murdered, no one would cover me, because they wouldn't be like, she lit up a room.
Yeah. She like the sticker. Yeah. I will never get murdered.
She was the social butterfly.
Like, she was just kind of like hermit that hated humans and liked murder a lot. It was really weird. She had some weird obsessions.
Her hair color changed frequently. Pretty sure there was some mental things going on there with that. And
unhealthily attached to her dogs. Like, you know, it's fine.
Right.
But Mindy was not that type. She literally, once again, nothing bad to say. And I truly believe it based on everything they showed about her. I'm like, she just seems like an amazing, happy person that you'd want to be around. She was also really big into her faith. She is very devoted to her church. She knew that God loved her. She would always go to church. And in college, her friends later said that she would always wake them up on Sundays and be excited to take them to church with her. So when she did go to college, she was majoring in physical education. So she wanted to be a coach of some sort when she finished.
Like she was very athletic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I think, yeah, something along those lines. And because, yeah, she did all that stuff in high school, that's kind of where she was headed with that. She also dreamed of being a mom. They talked about that a lot. They said, you know, as she even got older, she was still just very loud and energetic. They said that she basically knew everybody at their college within like the first week of them getting there, because she made a point of meeting everyone and she just knew everyone and everyone felt like they were friends with her. So they also said that as far as her being such a good friend, she would always be there to listen to her friends, would give the best advice, and she would never judge them and would stand by them regardless of what they chose to do in a situation. So I thought that's rare because not rare, but it is sometimes to find those kind of friends. So
especially college age.
Oh yeah. And I mean, she's not that all like pretty popular girls are like that, but like a lot of those girls like care about themselves more than others. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like some, I mean, in general, anyone, but like she was not that type at all. And so I thought that was cool, especially being that she had a lot going for herself. It'd be easy to be more self-absorbed. So
good for her.
So September 13th, 2006. So she was 22 at this time. Two of her friends, Tony, who was a female, and Danielle were out at a bar. They wanted Mindy to come out with them. And so they called her a few times and got no answer. They both tried from their own phones, didn't get an answer. So they decided just to drive over to her apartment, because you're in a small town. It's not like it's a far drive. Right. So Mindy had actually just recently moved into a one bedroom apartment by herself, which was odd because she was such a people person and they all gave her crap about her being an extrovert, but living alone. But the reason she actually lived alone was because her freshman year of college, she was diagnosed with MS and she did not let that, you know, get her down. She said she wanted to go through these clinical trials and do whatever she could to help find a cure ultimately. So because of her wanting to volunteer and be in these trials, she had to get infusions like on a very regular basis. So she actually moved closer to the location that she had to go to get these done. And she knew she was going to be spending a lot of time there. So she thought it'd just be easier to do that. So I was like, that's dedication too. So there was no issues with her. I mean, at her apartment, she never felt unsafe. There was actually like correction officers, or one, at least I know, but, that lived in her building, but she made comments about like feeling safe because there was people there like that. So, that night the girls get to her apartment. I'm not even sure what time this happened, but, Tony, she decides she's just going to run in real quick and get her and drag her out. So she goes to her apartment door, knocks a few times and doesn't get an answer. So she goes to open the door and it was actually unlocked, which surprised her. So she walked in, it was dark, and she walked a few steps in when she bumped into something. So she realizes that it is Mindy on the floor. She said she just saw her eyes open and realized that something really bad had happened. And so she just, I mean, fight or flight, freaks out. Runs out screaming, runs out to the car. Danielle said she opened the driver's door and grabbed her arm and was like dragging her out of the car inside and just hysterical. First of all, like that's terrible enough, but imagine being the one to find your friend like that. So they go back inside. And by this point, neighbors had kind of come out in the hall because they hear the screaming. They don't really know what's going on. There was one of the tenants that lived there was a man, and they asked if he would like go in there with her, you know, cause she didn't want to go by herself. So he was nice about it. He goes in with her. He checks for a pulse and he said he couldn't find one. He said, "I'm sorry, your friend is gone." And Tony said at that point, she said she just remembers backing up, like taking steps back until she ran into the wall because she was so just like shocked. And, unfortunately, to the scene that they saw, Mindy actually had a white belt wrapped around her neck, and it was obvious that her throat had been cut, and there was actually a knife still in her neck.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So very traumatic for many reasons. When they talked to her friends in these documentaries too, her friends, one of them, you know, says like, even if I end up losing my mind one day, I will never lose that day. That is something I will never, ever get out of my mind, which talk about trauma, So 911 is called and Sergeant Dave Swenson arrives. He actually lived like a block away from this apartment. So he goes, he finds the girls extremely frantic, and he noticed immediately when walking into the building that he could smell Pine Sol, like very strong. So he, of course, enters the apartment. He sees the broken knife in her neck, and he notices another broken knife laying next to her body. There was an empty bottle of Pine Sol kind of like under her arm, and there were chemical burns to her face, neck, and chest. He said it was just like an absolutely horrific scene. He actually knew who she was just because it was a small community and she was super involved in everything. He didn't know her personally, but he knew of her.
Right.
So he was very shocked to find this because he knew that she was well-liked. So then, of course, the horrible part about having to notify her family. Her parents said it was about 11:30 that night, and you know they live out on a farm, so they see cop lights approaching from fairly far away, and they know something is wrong. They just said that Mindy was gone, and they, you know, said they just assumed it was like a car accident, and he just, you know, whoever it was, just said it was not, and it was a suspicious death, and they just could not even process it. So her mom, Eunice, said it felt like someone stabbed a spear through her heart. She said she immediately just broke down and ran to Mindy's room, and she had like a sweater laying out. And she said she just grabbed that sweater and just held it and cried into it. Isn't that awful?
That's so, sad. I can't even imagine as a parent.
I know. I can't, like, losing a child is, I mean, would be the worst thing ever, but then like in that kind of manner, it's awful. So, you know, police immediately start getting to work on all of this. So they're trying to get a timeline. So they are able to determine that Mindy was last seen at about 12:30 PM. She was leaving campus and heading home. She had a missed call on her cell phone at 12:47. And it was about 1 p.m. when a neighbor said they smelled the Pine Sol. So this all seemed to happen within like a half hour time.
Jesus. So, okay. Yeah. So the Pine Sol, did they use it to clean the scene or did they use it to burn her?
That's what they're trying to decide at this point. Okay. I think later they do determine it's just to get rid of evidence, but not to like deface her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, and clearly just a desperate attempt at anything to do that. But yeah, such a gross thing. And like, that is such a strong smell. Like, it obviously is. That's going to be noticed. I mean, what an idiot. I mean, all of it. But
yeah.
And it all happened so quick that it's just like really crazy to think from the time she left school within a half hour, she would be dead, you know?
Yeah.
And then she was obviously there. I think it said, I want to say I read like somewhere it's like around 7:30 or 8 was when her friends went to her apartment. So, I mean, it took a while.
It did, but I mean, like, if it was, like, 11:30 at night when they went to go to her parents, then, like, it's usually going to be a couple hours after to get the scene to just verify things, probably. So, I mean, but geez.
I know. Just insane. I mean, you know, they talked to all the neighbors, and it's a smaller apartment complex. I don't know how many people actually lived there. One of the neighbors was pregnant. Her name was Chrissy, because I'll talk about her more later, too, but she was terrified because she had a one-year-old and she was pregnant, and she was like, what? Like, she didn't want to stay there. So her husband and her, and then her daughter, they went to stay like with her parents because nobody felt safe and no one even knew who would hurt her because she had no enemies that they knew of. And it was bizarre. So they really had no idea where to begin with all of this. And they knew that they needed more help than their little town could really handle. So they called in the Bureau of Criminal Investigation, and they came in and they look at the crime scene, and they did notice too that her purse was still there, her phone, her wallet with money in it still. So it did not appear to be a robbery.
No, that sounds personal then.
Totally. She was fully clothed too. So there was no, it didn't appear that there was any sexual assault. Mm-hmm. There was a full basket of laundry by her in her bag. So it looked like she had just kind of walked into her apartment, sat her stuff down, and then whatever happened. So one of the odd things too was that in her picture frames, like around her apartment, some of the pictures were removed. And we'll talk about that more later because there doesn't, a whole lot doesn't go into that. But yeah, it was a weird thing that they noticed. They were like, okay, somewhat obsessed with her.
I was going to say, is this someone who wants her life?
Yeah, like... it's very weird. Very weird. And I know we had talked about this. I have this in my notes again, too, just how they weren't sure if the pine saw was used to deface her or hide evidence. But they do notice that under her fingernails, there's tissue, like skin tissue.
Good.
Yes. So they were smart. I'm glad they wrapped her hands immediately. Yeah. For evidence. So when they take her away, they kept her hands wrapped, and that's where they're at with that. So then when they start like talking to people, the first person they really look at was this neighbor who initially comes in to help, because you have to. I mean,
right. It's, whoever found her, right. I'm sure the two friends who found her too were looked into. Like,
it's it's easier to eliminate people, you know, than it is to just start pointing fingers. But, so they talked to this guy. So his name is Robert Lenz, and he was really helpful. He said he understood exactly why they had to interview him. He got it. He said he knows that he looks suspicious because of being at the scene immediately. And also, he was covered in tattoos. He said he had moved from California fairly recently. So he's new. He's a stranger. Nobody knows him.
He's not known in the community real well. He's tattooed up in a small town.
Yeah, we know how that goes. Yes. Yeah. So he was like, I get it. I can see why. It's very sussy of me, you know.
Yeah.
He was a super nice guy, too. Like, when they talked to him on the documentary, like, immediately, he just seems very forthcoming, and you don't really feel like he had anything to do with it, which he doesn't. Like, we'll just share that now. But
yeah.
It was weird, though, because, like, his hands, he had cuts all over his hands and stuff and Band-Aids. And they're like, what is that from? But he actually worked at, like, a steel plant. So he was constantly working with steel. So he said that was just the type of work he did.
Yep.
He said, of course, this looks very suspicious.
Dude, wear some gloves.
Jeez. I know. That's what I thought. Like, you're not that cool and tough just because you're getting cut up. Like,
that's
no one's going to judge you for putting a glove on, man.
I swear, some of the shit he's done to his hands, and I'm like, you probably needed stitches for that. And like, why are you, if you're doing this, like, instead it's just wrapping it with electrical tape and shit. Yeah. And I'm like,
yeah, like, cool, man. I'm sure that's really cleaning that wound real well for you. Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was this guy. He actually had a record back in California where he moved from. He was very upfront about that. It was for pot. You know, he had some guns. He had stolen a car. But his alibi did check out. He had been at work that whole time, but they did still, you know, take a DNA sample.
Yeah.
I don't think I ended up putting it in my notes, but later they do say that they took DNA from 21 different people.
Oh,
so like they were very efficient.
Yeah.
So after they talked to him, then they were like, well, let's talk to any boyfriends, ex-boyfriends, whoever. So they talked to Jordan Rainham. So this was like her current boyfriend, I guess. They had been together for over a year. Jordan was a really nice guy. He also had a very strong faith. They had actually met at church. He had no criminal record, was very family oriented. When he would go visit his family, he would always take Mindy with him. So like she was just part of the family. He was super supportive of her, but people did think that he was maybe more into her than she was into him. So they thought, well, that could potentially be a motive. She doesn't like him back. I mean, clearly grasping at straws at any point.
I mean, it's still one of those things. And let's face it, we've had plenty of cases where these super religious, like they seem like the churchgoer, small town life. Oh, they're so great. They would never do it. And then they did.
And then they do. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was his story there, but he said that he had only talked to her once that day, which was odd because he said that she would call him like 10 times a day. Like they would talk a lot, but he was working, so he didn't really like, and he didn't think anything had happened. He was working at his family's farm at the time too, and they are able to confirm that alibi. I did feel sad for him too on the documentary, just because he's so emotional the whole time that they talk to him. He's very like forthcoming and helpful. He gives DNA and he even agrees to do a polygraph, which comes back as inconclusive, of course, but because of how emotional he was, like he's just crying a lot. Just, and it was just sad.
Listen, polygraphs, there's a reason why they're not admissible in court.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. And so like even Mindy's friends said they're like, they never suspected him from the start. They're like, he loved her. he would never do this. So then they talked to an ex-boyfriend. His name was Kyle Kuznia. I don't know if that's the right how to say that, but he was her ex before this Jordan. So they had actually dated about 2.5 years. So he was the very athletic, popular kind of guy. Mindy was not like obsessed with him, but they said, her friend said that she always just thought of him as like the love of her life. She really thought she would get married to him. She had basically planned out their whole wedding. So about a year before she was murdered, they had broken up. And so probably, you know, shortly before she started dating Jordan. So it was a really hard breakup. I guess she was just super devastated. The reason they broke up was he had actually graduated college and had moved away for a job about an hour away. They tried the whole long distance thing and it just didn't work. She was always worried that he would find someone else. And I'm like, girl, look at you. You're gorgeous. Like, you can find anyone. A female, the insecurities.
Also, and I would say small town life too. Like, oh, and young. Like, do you remember, like, the people you fell for? And you just fell so hard and so fast.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know? So it's just one of those things.
Like, and 2.5 years is a long time at that age too. So like,
yes.
Okay. And she was super close with his family, which makes it harder too.
Exactly.
So yeah. But when, you know, they talked to Kyle, he said that their relationship always had its ups and downs and that they just couldn't make the long distance thing work. So they had pretty much stopped. He had moved on. He had a new girlfriend. And then he said,
when you're that young, long distance,
yeah,
like,
that's silly. No. So he said they hadn't really talked or anything. And the last time that he had seen her was about 7 months prior. So I don't know. She must have been in town for something, but she actually stopped by his place and she wanted to talk to him. And she was super emotional and was basically saying she really missed him and like wanted to get back together. And he said he was just like, go away. I don't have anything to say to you. I've moved on. And so he said, of course, you know, naturally now he feels bad because that was the last time he had seen her or talked to her. But he had actually been working at the time of the murder, which was also confirmed. So he's kind of in the clear, but it was weird because he does mention how Mindy and his dad talked a lot still. So this, it gets a little weird, a little dicey here. He thought it was weird. He said that they talked and that his dad would visit her a lot. He said that he thought his dad was just like too attached to her.
That's weird.
And like, I knew she was close with his family, but like, that's taking it to a new level.
That, especially like, I mean.
Hey, Dark Hearts. We wanted to tell you about one of our favorite products that helps keep you safe and also gives you peace of mind.
She's Birdie is a cool little device that is small enough you can hook it on a keychain, bag, or even just carry it.
There are two different types of birdies. The original birdie, when activated, chirps very loud. Trust me, it's ear piercing. We've tried it. And also has an intense strobe light that helps deter attackers and gets the attention of potential bystanders.
The She's Birdie Plus is a Bluetooth-enabled device that connects to an app on your phone that gives you 24/7 support where live reps are available. It can also send you a faint call to get out of an uncomfortable situation, as well as provide GPS location to your chosen contacts. This birdie does require a subscription you can either pay monthly or annually.
The best part is you can get 15% off your order when you use the code DARKHEARTS15.
Check out shesbirdie.com to see what fun colors and patterns you can purchase.
Stay Heartland kind and be extra Darkland wary with your new birdie. I feel like if it was the mom and her, like, as like friends, that might even be different. Something about, yeah.
I'd say also if she didn't have her own dad, like if she didn't have a father figure in her life,
yes,
he kind of stepped into that role, and like maybe. But also I wonder, like, if their breakup had to have been somewhat bad, if he was like, why are you here? I have nothing to say to you. Go away.
Yeah.
So then
he seemed very cold when he was telling that story too.
So like, it seems odd that the parents would then still be that close. Like, I could still see maybe maintaining, because like, yes, I don't know. That just, it,
that's
it
a bit too far. I agree. Yes. It'd be different even if it was like a brother of his, which I don't know. The dad thing is weird. It's just bizarre. So he thought it was weird, even, I mean, enough that he mentioned it. he said that when his mom found out that his dad was like talking to Mindy a lot, his mom was pissed, which like, duh. I mean,
that makes it even more because if you're hiding it.
Right. So that's what Kyle says about it. So, his whole thought was like, he wasn't sure if it was like a father-daughter situation kind of relationship or what. But he thought that Mindy was talking to his dad because it still connected her to him. And she still was really wanting a relationship with him. So of course they bring in Kyle's dad next. So Kyle's dad's name is Rodney. So he comes in and he's like just super emotional, like very small town farmer cowboy type guy. He just kept saying, well, he didn't just keep saying, but he said initially that he loved Mindy and she really reminded him of his wife when she was younger, which that was a very weird thing to say, right?
Ew.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I could be like, she was like a daughter to me.
Yeah, right.
So she reminds me of my wife younger.
Yeah. Because he says she's bubbly and fun, but then he follows that up with saying it wasn't anything more than a father-daughter type of relationship. I'm like, why did you just compare it to your wife then, bro? Like,
yeah, that's weird.
He said that when they kept talking, it was just because they were like close, like family. He said that they used to just talk about Kyle and she'd always like ask how he was, if he was dating anyone, that kind of a thing. And then he said it eventually turned into them just talking about life, you know, shooting the shit, like about everything. Okay, weird.
But if it was still like a familial thing, your wife wouldn't be pissed about it happening.
Right. Exactly. So as Kyle had said that his mom was pissed, when they asked Rodney, he said that she didn't care. He said he told her that he really needed a friend and that he had found that in Mindy. He said that she was fine with that and understood. So I'm going to go with probably Kyle's side of that is probably correct, right? Yeah. Freaking weird.
I can't see your wife being okay with you becoming such good friends with your son's ex-girlfriend.
Who's like this super cute young college girl. Like,
yeah. I'm assuming he's in his like 50s.
Yeah. And he looks old too. Like, it wasn't what I expected when they show him. I was like, really?
So that's not like, my husband has a friend. He went to high school with her. They're friends. Like, that's whatever. But if he were to now be like, so I'm besties with this girl who's 20 years younger than me, which now at this point would be 10 years old, which that's a whole other red flag right there.
Yeah, that's different.
But let's say we're in our 50s and she's 20.
That's like, bizarre. There's some sort of motive there on either part. What does she want out of this? Because, And like, I really think she was really wanting that like in with Kyle, because she was that type of a girl.
Dad, if he's close with dad, maybe dad can like wear him down and give me another chance.
Totally. They talked so much, like up to 10 times a day. Okay. That's weird. So they would talk that often and then it kind of dwindled down to like a few times a week. But Rodney said he just like couldn't let her go because he just felt like she was a daughter. And he said that he even gave her money once because she said she wasn't going to be able to afford to go to her brother's wedding. So he said he gave her $100 bill and she was like refusing to take it and said, I don't want this. He's like, just take it. It's yours. And it was weird because when he tells that story, he says, oh, my wife would kill me if she knew this. And I'm like, that's a weird thing to say too. So yeah, he said he really just felt like he was taking care of her as a daughter, which as her dad, her actual dad, I'd be like, no, probably not. But it is weird because her parents really defend him and they say that they never felt weird about the situation and they really felt like he was just caring for her. And like, I really, really like her parents. Like when they talk to them, they seem like very genuine, good people. So I'm like, I mean, I want to believe them, but I also feel like that's weird. Like, is there more they're just not sharing about it? Because it leaves me feeling like it's cringy. It's ick.
Unless with the parents of In Plain Sight.
Yeah. I don't know. Ugh. Very, very weird. So, Rodney said that when he had found out that she had died, he was like so shook up. So it's weird because he even calls her phone several times after he finds out that she's dead. And he leaves all these weird voicemails that they hear. And in these voicemails, he's like crying. He's saying, I just wanted to hear your voice. I'm so, so sorry for what happened to you. And I'm sorry that it happened the way that it did. Like, very weird, like definitely not taking him off the radar by making these right. weird comments. And can, I mean, multiple voicemails.
And I'm like, so, I know grief can do weird things, but yeah. you already look so suspicious, yeah. dude.
And like the way you're saying things, you wish it didn't happen that way. Like, do you know more? Like, it could be yeah. not, but yeah, weird, right? So he's clearly just like, they're like, is he just super obsessed with her? Or I don't know. But, you know, him and Kyle both also give their DNA because they're hoping that somewhere along the line there's going to be a match. So they do follow up, though, on Rodney's alibi, and he was working about 2 hours away at the time. So he was just a creepy old man obsessed with his daughter, or his daughter, his son's ex-girlfriend. Not quite sure. So anyway, that's okay. That was weird. It was a very weird twist there. But so they hold Mindy's funeral while this is happening. They have her funeral in New Salem, where she grew up, at the high school gym. There was over 1,000 people there. It was like standing room only.
Wow.
And the police had actually set up surveillance teams for it to watch for any unusual reaction, unusual people, anything that they could possibly find.
Like to, you know.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So they don't find anything from that, which, I mean, which sucks because they really don't even know what they're looking for. So the town was like legit terrified. People were talking about how they were even scared to take a shower because they weren't afraid. Like, they were afraid that someone was on the other side of the curtain. Like, oh, nobody geez. Knew. Yeah. Like, it was so weird and such a violent, brutal murder that that's right. like, so the neighbor, Christy, who was pregnant, she said they didn't even want to go back to the apartment because they were scared that someone was going to go back. They didn't know if they were targeting people there or what, which, yeah, I wouldn't even want to be in a building that someone got murdered in, first of all. So,
even if I knew who killed her, like, even if you knew right away who did it, I'd still be like, nah.
Knowing that that happened there, like, no thanks. No. So, yeah, that's kind of the status of where everyone's at this point. And then finally, the DNA comes back from Mindy's hands that they had taken. They said it was good and bad. So, good news. They actually had a match. The bad part was they didn't know who to. So it matched a case in the system that was okay. unsolved. So they had they collected DNA at this other crime and it matched that case. So this, I thought about talking about this at the beginning. There's actually kind of like two victims in this case. But this other one, she didn't even want her identity revealed or any of that. So like they talked to her and stuff on the interview or the documentary, and she's, you know, it's all dark and no name. Yeah. So like,
well, just, oh, so she's still alive.
Oh, she's still alive. Yes. So I'll tell you about that crime. Let me go into that. So that makes more sense. So like I said, the DNA matched an unsolved case. So this case was a sexual assault that happened in Fargo a couple years prior, where the predator was never caught. So the victim in that case, she was 22 at the time. She said she was studying to be a teacher. She had gone out to a concert with friends one night and then to a bar. She remembers setting her drink down and going to the bathroom at the bar. And the next thing she knew, I guess I should have given a trigger warning to sexual assault, because I apologize if you need to get off. This is the time. The next thing she knew, she woke up. She was on her stomach on a mattress being held down and assaulted. And she said that her assailant had his arm in her mouth, so she couldn't scream.
Oh, God.
So she said she literally thought he was going to kill her. And at some point after the attack, she said, I don't know how, but or she doesn't even know how. She ended up in the apartment hallway and she just remembers running and screaming and banging on doors. And finally, someone let her in. They call 911. By the time the police got there, her attacker was gone, but she was able to give a description from what she did remember.
Right.
She said that it was a black male over 6 foot tall and over 200 pounds, but that was about it. So she did go and have the rape kit collected, which was where they got this DNA, thankfully. Mm-hmm. She said that she just lived in constant fear after that. And after like 2 years, she just lost all hope that they would ever catch this person. So she was really shocked when she got a phone call from a police officer in Valley City saying that the DNA collected at her in her case matched DNA found at a murder scene. Can you imagine that? Like,
Jesus.
And she talks about later having survivor's guilt and everything because of that. And they ask her again to kind of give another description because now it's going to help with this case, you know, narrow it down in Mindy's case. So she gives the same description. So they basically collect DNA from any black males that Mindy knew. And one of these men was Mo Gibbs. So Mo Gibbs was the corrections officer that lived in her building.
When you mentioned corrections officer, mm-hmm. I wondered.
So he was 34 years old and he was married to Chrissy, the pregnant neighbor with the young daughter. So they had been married for 2 years and he loved Chrissy's daughter like his own. The baby that she was pregnant with was his, but her one-year-old was not. So they talked about what a great father and everything he was to her. Like, she worked days, he worked nights. So like they would take turns taking care of the daughter. So Mo had a very interesting background. So he had seemed to really have turned his life around because when he was growing up, he was a gang member of the Crips in Central California for most of childhood, teenagehood, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Eventually gets out, joins the Navy. He also played college basketball. And then after that, I don't know what it was that got him to move to Valley City specifically, but he worked as a college security officer at the college there before he became a jailer at the county jail. So, of course, when they ask, you know, the police and everything, and Detective or Sergeant Swenson, the one who primarily runs the case, he's like, yeah, I knew him. We all knew him because it's a small town. They all worked the same, you know, thing. They knew him. He goes, I literally played on a softball league with him this past summer. He was on my team. So they're all really shocked when the DNA, they take his DNA. Yeah, they match it. And it matches both cases. And Swenson said he even asked the crime lab to run it again just to confirm. Right. And so they said, we've already run it like three times because they were even just like, what?
Right.
So there was no mistake. That's who it was. So they call him down to the station, but they don't mention the evidence that they have on him because they're afraid he's going to run. And I have to applaud this police department because they were very like proactive. They had different teams set up to follow him to the police station without him knowing that they were following him because they were afraid he would run if he knew. So they were like, you can see it on the documentary, some of the footage, you know, they're like, he's exiting the building, getting into his car. So he goes straight to the police station. And when he comes in, he actually has his stepdaughter with him, like the one-year-old. He's holding her.
Can we also talk about the timeline of his stepdaughter? If they've been married for 2 years, but she's one.
That's what I was confused about, which maybe some of the information overlapped, or maybe I have a typo. I mean, I don't know, but
I mean, or maybe it's possible. He was forgiving of an affair, or they got together real quick.
Oh no, you know what? Now that you say that, I'm pretty sure I did read somewhere that she was pregnant when they initially met.
And so then, like, they got married quick.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So I'm not sure. Yeah. And I don't even care enough to go into his background. I mean, he's a piece of shit. Like,
but, is this the important thing?
I know. No, but it's still, it's interesting. But it says a lot about
where my brain goes too.
I know. Like, you're right. Cause I remember when I was typing that, I was like, huh? Glad I wasn't the only one.
No.
So they take the stepdaughter away from him while he's being questioned. And I think he genuinely thinks he's just there for whatever. Like, I don't even know what they said.
This man clearly thought he was.
Oh, yeah. So
in the clear,
they, you know, ask him about his whereabouts again. They're like, we're just following up. So he said that he had left the apartment or he worked days. That's what, or nights. So yeah, he was home in the day with the daughter, which is weird.
So that
too.
Means when this happened, he left her alone.
Apparently would have had to. So
I mean, I would hope it's better than the alternative of her being there when it happened.
I know. That's true. So he said he had left his apartment at 11:30 and picked up his wife for lunch. He said he dropped her back off at work around 12:30, got home at about 12:45. Remember, she had a missed call at 12:47. He said the only thing unusual that he noticed when he arrived home was the strong smell of Pine Sol. So he said he thought someone was just like cleaning out one of the empty apartments and there was a cleaning crew there. So They asked him last time he had seen Mindy. He said he didn't see her very much. The last time that he had seen her was about a week prior to the murder. He said when he had gotten home, she was walking in carrying a bag, backpack, and a laundry basket. So he helped her carry it up to her apartment, and then he left. And the cops immediately are like, that's odd. He's basically describing the crime scene that we found.
I was going to say, I was like, you literally just put yourself there.
Dumbass.
Just trying to say it was a week prior. Week,
yeah. Like, okay, did he think that would line up and that stuff sat there for a week and then that happened? Like,
yeah.
What a dumbass. So, yeah. So then they're like, okay, so what would you say if we told you that your DNA is an exact match to the DNA that we found under Mindy's fingernails? And he's like, there's no way. It couldn't, because I had nothing to do with this. And he's just immediately in denial. So then they say, guess what? It actually matches a sexual assault case also in Fargo from years prior. They ask him if he remembers that. And he says, you know, I've had a lot of sexual encounters. Yeah, because you're so cool. He said, but I've never forced anyone to do anything. So that couldn't be true. Okay. So he's just like, deny. So they have enough to arrest him. So they do. And when they arrest him, Swenson said that he said to him, you're a dad, just like me. You know, they're like friends. And he said, why can't you just be honest for this family's sake? Like, you know what it's like having a kid, you know, like why? And he still just would not say anything. So Mindy's family was obviously shocked when they hear this news, because they don't know him. And they're like, now confirmed that this total stranger did this. And his wife, Chrissy, was also shocked, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
She did not think he would ever be capable of something like that. So I think she really was innocent in that whole thing. Because at first I thought, like, did she have something to do with this? No, I think she was working and she had no idea that this guy, because here he is taking care of her daughter, which makes you wonder, was he really like behind the scenes? Who knows?
That poor woman too is probably got so much mom guilt of like, oh my God, I left my daughter alone with this man.
And she's little enough that she'll never be able to talk and say what happened or if anything did or not. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So in the fall of 2006, while he's awaiting his trial, Mindy's mom decides she wants to write him a letter. So she said she's a woman of faith, but she still had so many unanswered questions and she just wanted him to apologize. And she didn't really expect to hear anything back from him, but he actually wrote back. And he denied everything to her and said, I did not kill your daughter. He said he lived his whole life just trying to prove his innocence. So
your DNA is there.
You dumbass. Yeah. So it gets weird. So, well, this gets crazy too. So after he gets arrested, five women come forward and said that Mo had sexually assaulted them at the correctional facility where they were incarcerated, where he worked.
So he was a correctional officer at a women's facility. This man's got the biggest power trip.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So.
And of course, they probably didn't originally come forward because, like, who's going to believe me?
No.
I'm an inmate.
And I think that shit happens way more than we ever hear about, because
100%
people won't come forward. And I'm like, that's just insane. So when that happens, of course, too, they're like, how in the hell did this guy get hired? But they find out later that none of this stuff showed up on his initial background check when he was hired, because he actually changed his name. And I don't know how that wasn't caught, but I don't know how that all works. I'm sure there's more to it, because they seem very good about like dotting the I's, crossing the T's, all that. So his name prior was Glenn Dale Morgan Jr. So when they find his actual record under that name, they do see too that he actually served 5 years in prison, because when he was in the Navy, he had been involved in a drive-by shooting. So he served time and he had this job. So yeah. So
holy
then
shit.
Yeah. It gets just wild. So in June of 2007 is when this trial actually starts. So the prosecution really focuses on how his initial story even places him at the time of the murder at the right place. And another thing that they really pointed out, which I thought was kind of like something I probably wouldn't think about as much, is that he was like always on his phone, avid texter, all this from 12:30 to like 1:30 There was nothing. He sent no texts. He did nothing on his phone for that hour of time. So they're like, clearly he was occupied with something else when he's on his phone every other minute.
Yeah.
So they had an ex-cellmate of his even testify. They didn't say what he necessarily said, probably just on what he had done on his in his past. And then, of course, you know, Tony, Mindy's friend who had found her, she testified. And then they really used the DNA under her nails as the evidence to show that she did put up a fight. And she basically led them to him because of that. So
Right. The
cops said that they think it was a sexually motivated crime, and that when he came on to her, she turned down his advance and he got pissed and just strangled her and stabbed her before he poured Pine Sol on her. But the thing that was so stupid about that was that the prosecution wasn't able to share their motive in the trial. And they also couldn't mention the other sexual assault case with the DNA. They said it was too precedential.
What?
Yeah. So they couldn't even say that. So as you can imagine, this gets a little whack because the defense, get this, their defense was that, well, this part I kind of get. None of his DNA was on the knives, those two knives, and his fingerprints weren't on there. As a matter of fact, there was actually DNA from two other males on the knife, and there was a hair in her hand, but they never found matches to those, which I think was her boyfriend. I mean, I guess his prints would probably match in DNA, but like, people could have been in her house multiple times, friends using knives, this
right.
and that. The hair could have been something completely random that she picked up when she was at school,
right.
was on her pants. So like, I get not having that, but the other DNA kind of speaks for itself. Am I right? Like, you can't deny yeah. that much under your fingernails.
You don't get DNA under your fingernails accidentally.
And like all of them, because then the defense even goes as far as saying that his DNA could have been transferred to her from her opening a doorknob after he did.
No,
not a chance. That's ridiculous. Maybe if there was a tiny bit, but when you have that much DNA,
no.
I'm getting all heated because I just think like, I get they're trying to, they are just doing their jobs too, but like,
but,
that's a bunch of, no.
But also like, that's not even like scientific.
No, you're just like making shit up.
Yeah.
So they also were saying, you know, well, his ex-cellmate had this long rap sheet and was lied and this and that. And you would think like, that's ridiculous. However, it's enough to put a doubt in the jury's mind because
well,
they deliberate for 4 hours, was it that time? And they come back deadlocked. Six said guilty, six said not. So it's a hung jury. So they're like, I mean, everybody was dumbfounded. Like, how could this even be? And how could people not? I don't know. I mean, they put enough doubt in their minds, I guess.
Yeah. I still don't understand how they weren't able to use this sexual assault case.
I know. That doesn't make any sense, especially being that that's how they initially got him. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So he stays in jail because of that other charge, that sexual assault charge, until he hits a new trial that started in October of 2007. At trial, he seemed very cocky and smug. This time the prosecution really made sure they had their ducks in a row. So they have a DNA expert come in and explain that the amount of DNA that was present could only result from vigorous physical contact, not like a doorknob. They're
right.
like, there's no way that much could be collected. And of course, the defense used the same tactics that they had before. This time, the jury deliberates for 4 days. So they come back with a guilty verdict. Hallelujah. Mindy's mom afterwards said she was so happy that it was over, but she said all of it was just a waste. She said none of this will ever bring Mindy back. So like,
yeah,
it's just shitty. So then at his sentencing, Eunice read a letter to Mo. She said, Mr. Gibbs, I forgive you publicly here. And I also want you to know I will never forget what you did to Mindy. She said that forgiving someone just gives them, or not forgiving someone gives them power over you and that they can make your life miserable and full of hate. So she didn't want that. So then when Mo gets a chance to make a statement and to talk to the family, whatever, he just continues to deny it. And he said, well, yeah, I would also forgive someone too, like she did, if it was my daughter, but it wasn't me. Like, what a coward, you know? So he gets sentenced to life with no parole.
Good.
And Thankfully, he ends up pleading guilty to all the other sexual assault charges and that rape case in Fargo, which was nice because the victim in that case was really scared to testify and have to relive it. But because, you know, he pled guilty, they didn't have to. However, she still was able to confront him, and she said she was not very nice. She said that she told him to think of his daughter being held down screaming like she did. She said that, you know, that's something that he should always remember, how she screamed for her life, and think of his own daughter doing that. And I was like, oh, that's so true, you piece of shit. So
I'm surprised that if he couldn't own up to killing Mindy, that he pled guilty.
Right. I know, because at first I thought then, well, maybe he just pled guilty because he knew he was already going to be in for the rest of his life. So just like, why go through it? But I thought if he really was trying to go through the appeal process, then you're not helping yourself out if you're going to go in for these other charges anyway. So I don't know what convinced him to do that, or if they just took death off the table, which would be a separate case though. So I don't know, unless they're like, hey, plead guilty to all these two and then we'll just give you life. I don't know.
I mean, that's so hard to say unless he realized too, because like DNA underneath the fingernails is different than DNA in the vagina.
True. Very true. Yeah. There's no denying that. I mean,
like, you can't say she opened, would she open a doorknob with her vagina?
Yeah, that would take some talent. Those people's paying off.
I mean, maybe, I don't know, I guess.
I mean, gross. But she also, it was like encouraging, because when they talk to her, she also says like she wanted people to know that there is light and happiness after going through something like that, that she's like now married, and she says she can look back on it and know that she like went through something very strong, you know, and she survived. And so I thought that was nice. Don't know her name, but I still consider her a victim in this case, especially because of her case is how they, you know, ultimately they were able Mindy's. And so for Mindy, there's like a heart-shaped garden near her apartment in Valley City. Her family and friends said that they were lucky to be touched by her very short life. She lived with joy, and she would want everyone else to do the same. I was going to share too that her parents, this thing was just like, I didn't really know where to put this in the story, but it kind of like gave me goosebumps. Her parents talked about when she would come home and visit them. Every time she left, her parents would stand down, you know, at the end of the road and watch her drive away. They said the very last time that they saw her when she was leaving home, she was driving down the road and they saw her car stop, and she reversed all the way back, got out of the car and ran up and hugged them one more time and told them that she loved them. They said it was like weird. It was one of those things like she knew something was going to happen. And I was like, that like gave me goosebumps, because I thought like, and they just like, oh, so sad. But they said that she knew that because of her, they were able to solve all these other cases and find justice for these other women, that she would be happy to do that. So I thought that was nice. And then the other thing I did put in here too was, I know I had mentioned earlier the pictures missing from the picture frames. They don't touch on that much, other than later they say that they just found out that those pictures she had actually taken out because she was preparing for like a modeling shoot, and she was like, had pictures
making
of herself.
Portfolio.
Yes. So I didn't really know where to insert that either, because it's kind of irrelevant. But I think like, initially walking in, I'm like, oh my gosh, these pictures are missing. This is weird. Yeah. So nothing came from that. But that is ultimately the story of Mindy Morgenstern. That's how you say it. But and the 2020 was like recent. So it's still pretty fresh. I had not heard that at all. And I don't know how.
I hadn't either, but I suppose at that time, like, I would have just graduated high school that spring and stuff, you know, I was 18 up in my own shit, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But that one was crazy and very sad. And like, I didn't realize the connection with the other case in the story. Oh, Siri's talking to me. Sorry, guys. but yeah, Siri didn't know either. So.
No. Listen, none of us Siri knew. Didn't know. We didn't know. That was, wow.
So Mo Gibbs can rot. And
I just can't believe it, dude.
I know, like, you're not going anywhere. Why not? And for her, like, her family was so like forgiving and stuff. Like, just what are you gaining from this? Like, you're a piece.
Yeah.
But like, he's huge. So like, he could easily overpower.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, it's sad to think too, like, how quick that happened. Like, he probably did help her inside, and then It just happened that quick. And he panicked and poured Pine Sol on her. Like, what?
Right.
I don't know. So that was that. That was North Dakota. I know.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to come out of that one.
I know. On a completely random note, you remember how like months ago, it's probably been a good 6 months or so, I lost my mouse.
Yes. Did you find it?
I found it in my laptop book bag that I had already torn apart so many times.
Weird. Where was it in there? Like in a weird pocket
or something? In a pocket that I know for a fact I checked.
Whoa. No, no.
I'm like,
that's
okay.
Crazy.
Fine then.
That's crappy. I was going to say crazy and I don't know. Weird. I don't know what I was even trying to say. I'm tired.
I know we both watched Beef.
You guys, that show's amazing. Check it out on Netflix. I was like weirded out initially when I saw it was called Beef. Oh my gosh, I loved it so much. The main characters in it, I loved them.
It was a roller coaster.
I love him. I don't even know his actual name. And her, she's been
Danny?
In,
Ali Wong is, she's been in so much. She has that one.
I only recognize that one movie that she had been in.
She's a comedian too. She has some stand-up specials on
Netflix. Oh, does
she?
Mm-hmm. No, because I've only seen her in the one, let me see if I can find her newest Netflix movie before this. I was like, oh, I saw that with her, but I haven't seen anything else of her. And I saw she does a lot of voices though for, you know,
like different
animated
things.
Films. Yeah. I just love her. Always Be My Maybe is the one that
I loved
knew.
That movie. Keanu Reeves was in that one too. And I love that. Yeah, she's got a lot of stand up too. You should watch some of her stand up. Baby Cobra is her stand up special when she's pregnant. It's hilarious.
That show was really good. It takes you like on all the feels and
it's so many things. There are so many things with that show. I really enjoyed it. There's a show I'm going to watch on there next that's apparently the scariest Netflix show.
What's it called?
Marianne.
Oh, I feel like I've heard of that. Let me look.
It's French. I guess it came out in like 2020.
Let me look. I think I saw an article on Netflix on Facebook about it or something where, you know, those articles.
I just saw it. Like I saw it in my feed thing and then I was like, So I'm gonna be watching that one next, I think.
Oh, what am I in here? Yeah, I just finished Love is Blind and the reunion show. And Leslie, I know you commented on something or sent me a message or something saying that she gets down with that too. So I was like, yeah, no shame in our game. I love me some Love is Blind.
I saw the live special was like delayed. There's a bunch of issues.
It ended up not being live at all, which is fine because I couldn't watch it that night anyway. But then yesterday I like, yes, I'm going to watch it right away in the morning. And it wasn't on Netflix until like 3 p.m. So I literally just watched it today. But
yeah,
it was everything I hoped it would be and more. So
there you go.
That's about it for me.
I am currently reading The Deep by Nick Cutter. I'm almost done with that. That one is good. Creepy. I finished The Root Witch, which that one was interesting. I would have liked to have seen more of the forest monster thing in it though. Like it felt kind of rushed at the end. Like it could have been more.
Disappointing.
Yeah, a little bit. I finished Priory of the Orange Tree on audiobook. That was phenomenal. If you like a high fantasy, that's a good one. I'm listening to Delicious Monsters now.
I don't, but someone does, and that is you.
Someone out there does. Delicious Monsters by Lizelle Sanberry is wonderful. It's got some paranormal aspects to it, horror, but it also deals with a lot of like trauma stuff. So like trigger warning, there is sexual assault in it. Nothing is too graphic. I also do like, because this author, I read her Blood Like Magic duology as and she's very good about putting trigger warnings in the very opening.
That's good.
I think
I should have done that today. I'm so sorry.
I mean, it.
I kind of forgot until I started talking about it, and I was like, oh, yep, that's what I forgot to do.
Yeah.
But I think it's kind of given in a true crime podcast.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I mean, we do our best. And yeah. you said it before you went on, so hopefully if someone was triggered by that, they had time to stop it. You know, you didn't just dive right into it, and you didn't go into any super graphic details. So.
I feel like just knowing that it happened is enough to be like,
yes.
You know?
Yeah, like as I'm saying, because there are, and I will say in Delicious Monsters, like it's well written. I'm almost done with it. But there is child sexual assault in it as well.
Yeah.
And it's stuff that you're like, you can see the signs of it. You can see it coming. Again, nothing is ever, there's a few moments, but where it's discussed, and some details are discussed, but it's nothing you see in the moment or anything, which I'm grateful for. But yeah, but it's still a very, very good book. The narrators are phenomenal. The way it's written is just really good. So if you like that kind of stuff, that's another one to check out.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I'm reading The Last Flight by Julie Clarke, and it's an intense thriller.
Ooh, I
and
love
I was kind of like,
thriller.
Do I want to read it before I fly? I feel like I read all these things. Like I watch all these things where I was like, cool, I'm never flying again because,
right?
You know, but yeah, it's actually pretty crazy. So far it's really good, but I mean,
yeah.
That's it. I haven't had much time, so that's
I need
all
to
I've read.
Have I'll you read. Text me that one that you told me, the rock paper scissors one or whatever it was called.
Yes, I will. But yeah, don't do anything with that one yet because I might be coming with some of your gifts. So
okay.
We're really good at keeping secrets around here. I'm actually really it's annoyed fine. About your gift. I think I told you in my
yeah. Thing.
The person messaged me today. That's a whole nother thing. You guys don't even care or need yes. to know. I'm mad because of whatever I can be, but okay. That's what we
yeah.
have. That's where we're
That's
at.
That's what we have. Again, you can, if you go to our website, which is www.hldlpodcast.com, you can find links to all of our social medias, our Patreon, our merch.
Yeah.
You can listen to our episodes there.
Merch.
All the exciting things, you guys. Send us any story ideas. If you just want to say hey, if you have merch ideas that you want us to see eventually, like just, you know, reach out. We love to hear from you guys.
We do. Yes, please do.
I love it. You know.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at.
Yeah. And we'll catch you on the flippity flop there the right. next week. Yeah.
It'll be fun. It'll be good times. Maybe I'll see you in Grand Island. Listen, if you live in Omaha, I get it. That's a jaunt just to go.
And like Grand Island, for anyone that lives there, tell us what you like about it because
I did hear they have a place called the Chocolate Bar that's supposed to be great.
I heard their like downtown area actually has some really like cute restaurants and stuff. Like as an adult, that's what I look for. I'm not like,
yeah,
well, what's the bar scene? I actually got my nose pierced there when I was 18 and because I went to Kearney for a semester, right. Which is not far from there. But
nope. Yep.
Other than that, that's all I really found in GI.
Yeah. A girl at work was telling me she went to high school there and stuff. And she was telling me, I think she called it like the Chicken Coop or something. It's something chicken. It's like a bar. She said,
oh,
it's,
yeah.
Like, a local
I feel like I've
watering
heard of that.
Hole. And she said they have really good food and stuff too. So,
yeah, that sounds fabulous. I'm all about like the food places and it's fun. Yeah.
It's great.
I don't know.
It's a great time.
That's it. It's great. It's fine. It's perfect.
It's all good. Yeah. So, until next time, stay heartland kind,
but darkland wary.